All right, that was a guy apparently like an Egyptian TV singing contest, but he thinks he sounds amazing.
He thinks he's got all the words right.
Is that, I am the one.
How funny.
He's just great. All right, so it's Monday morning. We've got lots of things to talk about, and there are plenty of places to go. Apparently, Iceland is using optical illusions to keep its roads safe. See, they can experiment with stuff like this in Iceland because they have a law-abiding population.
No, but also because they're not fixing potholes or have to fix potholes.
Well, there's only two roads in Iceland anyway. I mean,
can you imagine doing a 3D effect? Well, we could around all our potholes. That might be quite fun. At least we'd see them better.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we'd have more accidents. Could be like distracted. Ah!
Well, that's exactly what the idea is to make motorists slow down.
Oh.
So at pedestrian crossings, they've created them out of like a 3D. So immediately that makes the driver slow down because you think you're going to drive over something.
Yeah. How clever.
Yeah. So that's pretty clever. They're popping up all over, which I really like. And there was another example recently in New Delhi.
Oh.
That's also quite cool. And the cops have got involved in doing a little photo shoot there.
Listen, these people,
it reminds me of the Beatles.
Yeah, it does. It's like the Indian Beatles. there are people, these artists who do that stuff,
who are
incredible. They just use chalk.
Yeah.
And it looks like there's an aquarium in the middle of the road. So, I mean, it's beautiful too, which I don't know how long it lasts with people driving over these things.
Mm.
But those 3D crossings are just beautiful.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
I did hit a pothole badly.
Oh, shit.
But it makes such a difference what car you're
someone
in.
Here in the office had to replace a tire just the other day, too.
It actually slices your tire sometimes. Those edges are really sharp.
Yes, sis.
But I did take my brother's car for the day during my car battery crisis.
Yeah.
And that was like floating, and you hardly feel any potholes. Whereas my car, if you just go over a stone, it comes out your bra.
Your whole car goes, like that.
So I would appreciate big drawings around these potholes so we could avoid them.
No, but that's very clever. I like it. I'd also like to see just more art all over the place.
Mm.
I mean, wouldn't it be lovely if our cities were beautiful again? And I do say again, because we used to have parks that were well-maintained.
Mm, you know, not like that now.
People, the municipality would plant trees. That was part of their job. It should be part of any municipality's job. Our municipality can't, in Johannesburg anyway, can't even get the basics right. So that's so far down the list that making a suburb beautiful, making a township beautiful, that's just not even on the agenda because we've got so many things to fix.
We're treading water. But speaking to an Uber driver, again, hashtag battery crisis.
Yeah.
He said when he saw the area that I was in, he almost didn't come.
Why? Because it's dangerous?
Because of the potholes.
Oh, you're joking.
And especially during the rain because they're filled with water and you can't see them. And he said, I used to love coming to these suburbs with beautiful green trees and lovely roads.
A disaster now.
But actually, he said, I turn down rides here, especially if it's raining.
Sure.
How sad is that? But, you know, and residents themselves are now paying for these potholes to be fixed above their taxes.
All right. Here's something awful. What has 24 eyes and is one of the world's deadliest animals with a sting that's so venomous that it could kill a human in minutes? 24 eyes. It sounds like one of those biblical monsters. It's like the monster of Revelation. With 14 eyes and 23 wings and 17 penises. And it'll come out from under your bed when you don't expect it to. And it'll bite you. What is it?
Can you imagine what it is?
It's probably a spider.
Do spiders have 24 eyes? That's gross.
Probably some kind of crawling creature that has 24 eyes. Did you just show the picture? Did you spoil it? No, okay.
What if I said it was not on land?
Oh, shit. I hope it's not in the sky because that'll be terrifying. So it's in the water?
It's in the sea.
Okay.
Do you just want me to let you know?
Yeah, because I don't know a lot of sea creatures. You know how I feel about that. Humans should not be venturing into the ocean.
A bunch of liberals in a bus.
That's probably a good guess, actually, Sila. I'd go with that. Tell us.
Is it the ANC top six and their spouses?
24 eyes. And they would have a deadly bite, yeah.
No, it is this animal.
Oh, no. It's like a jellyfish type thing.
It's a box jellyfish.
Okay.
One of the deadliest animals in the world. Considered the most venomous creature
Congo Chris
in the world.
Guessed it. Where are its 24 fucking eyes, though? I don't see any eyes.
It depends. You know, those vary in size from like a centimeter by a centimeter cube.
Yeah.
To really enormous.
So
and the little ones do as much damage because they've got just as long tentacles.
So you wouldn't know. I mean, who would see that?
You could maybe
put that
not
in your pool
it.
And you wouldn't know it was there.
Yeah.
Shit. Don't know if I like that.
Pretty scary. So what happens is, where do they live firstly?
Australia.
Coastal areas. Australia and the Indo-Pacific. You knew it. They have been found in waters shallower than 5 meters. These enormous ones, but have been found over 50 meters deep.
Yeah.
As their name suggests, they've got these kind of square boxy shapes, but a lot of them are completely transparent, so you would not see them. Why are we going into the sea still, Australia?
I don't know, but Vera says it's a Durst jellyfish. Look at that thing. You wouldn't see those tentacles.
No, you wouldn't.
What do you call them? Tendrils. What do you even call those things? It's terrible. Each tentacle has around 5,000 stinging cells that the ocean creature uses to protect itself or attack its prey. Oof.
So most species of jellyfish don't have eyes at all.
Yeah.
But these have 24. They're arranged in four groups called Rapalia of six eyes, with each bunch sitting on a stalk. On a corner of their bell. Some of these eyes are simple light detectors, while others, actually the upper ones, point upwards to give them a 180-degree view.
Oh, that's a horrible creature.
Not only that, but most jellyfish are propelled, they don't self-propel, they move with the tide.
Oh, yeah.
This one can self-propel at a big speed.
Oh, so it can come towards
you. It can come at
you. It can get you.
It's going to get you.
It's going to get you.
Yeah.
Okay,
why are they so dangerous?
Well, the poison.
All of the poison.
Why are they so dangerous? I love who wrote this article? A nursery
school
teacher?
No, this is explaining what happens.
Why are they so poisonous? Why are they so dangerous? Because of the poison and the eyes.
Their tentacles contain stinging cells called cnidocytes.
Oh,
cnidocytes?
No.
Cnidocytes.
You're not winning this creature over to me.
They're curled
really
up
not.
Inside a tiny part of these cells with harpoon-like structures called nematocysts, waiting for the signal to release their fury. So basically, these barbed nematocysts act like a dart, and they release their toxin. So basically, these proteins that are in this toxin wreak havoc with your body. They create holes all over in your cells. Causes pain, scarring, headaches, vomiting, anxiety, sweating, difficulty breathing, increased blood pressure. A sting from an Australian box jellyfish can cause death within 5 minutes. You don't even get to go to the shore.
Horrible. What a horrible thing. I tell you what, you know, just as there are people who go, oh, the world is so beautiful. And I took pictures of some amazing, amazing sunsets over the course of this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, something about like an autumn sunset on the sea that's just beautiful. But just as there are beautiful things, there are also just dreadful things like this box jellyfish. You know, you just think, what moment of anger was God in when he decided, here's a box jellyfish? It's a nasty thing.
Horrible. And the bigger ones kill and eat turtles.
Oh, that's horrific. And you can see it being digested.
I'm sure you would, but they probably don't get to eat the shell. They probably just eat the fleshy bits. They mostly eat like shrimp and things like that.
How revolting. Do you remember that version of All Things Bright and Beautiful? You remember, did you ever sing that?
Small, of course.
No, you sang that at school, right? All Things Bright and Beautiful. Anyway, there's a much better version that Monty Python did a while ago.
Oh, yes.
Reminds me of this box jellyfish. All Things Dull and Ugly. All Creatures Short and Squat. All Things Rude and Nasty. The Lord God Made the Lot. Each little snake that poisons. Each little wasp that stings. He made their brutish venom. He made their horrid wings. All things sick and cancerous, an evil great and small. All things foul and dangerous, the Lord God made them all. Each nasty little hornet, each beastly little squid. Who made the spiky urchin? Who made the sharks? He did. All things scabbed and ulcerous, all pox both great and small. Putrid, foul, and gangrenous, the Lord God made them all.
It gets worse and worse.
Yeah, there Brilliant. We go. Think about that. Yeah,
I
don't want to be in the sea.
No, I don't. I don't want to be in there.
Those things, they do not like us. So Australia does have the most dangerous animals on earth. Heck, there are even more kangaroos here than there are people. And the poor things get run over all the time. That's what Australia Mighty says. And what's South Africa? What's in South Africa? Still want to go to fucking Australia. There's no reason for that shithole. People are just nasty about Australia this morning. Wow.
Listen, we've got some pretty venomous creatures. We're right up there with our snakes and things.
Yeah. The grossest animal is a butt fly larvae. It burrows through holes somewhere in your body. And
yes, it does it to dogs. And I don't know why. Well, I do actually know why, but it's in my algorithm. And they pull them out. The vets pull them out. But they're all like bunched up under their paws and in their nose.
Oh, no.
They leave this gaping hole.
Sis.
And you actually just squeeze their paws and they start popping out. Oh, so bad.
That's revolting. It's like those videos that people watch and they sometimes send me and please don't.
Like pimple popping stuff.
Oh, I can't.
This is that, but like to the power of 10.
It came up, you know, when you go to search on Instagram, like you're looking for someone because you add them or whatever.
Yeah. You've got to search quickly on that page. Otherwise it sucks you in.
And then you get pulled into this thing where there's like some doctor and then they're squeezing stuff.
Yes.
And like these horrible things come out of people.
I enjoy watching those.
No, can't see that. I can't do it.
The butt fly things are where they come out in bunches. And if you have that fear, what's it? Trichophobia?
Trypophobia.
Fear of holes.
Yeah.
Then you get like a double dose.
There's this terrible AI page where they have like eyes within eyes within eyes. It's just, it's horrible. It's just so disturbing. And then this monster that morphs into another monster and this thing comes out of its mouth. And I can't watch it. Someone showed it to me this weekend. My husband is obsessed with watching those videos of butt flies. I don't know why he doesn't just watch porn like a normal human being. I started watching White Lotus this weekend.
From like season one?
Season three.
Okay.
And I watched, so season one, I remember I watched the whole thing. Yeah. Season two, I watched half of it and I got bored.
Yeah.
Season three, I'm on episode three.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good. That guy who does it, Mike White or whatever, White someone White. Anyway, he's the producer. Yes. Very, very clever guy.
Yeah.
And there's always like some underlying plot. There's some revelation that's going to be made clear by the end of the season.
Yes. I haven't started watching this season yet.
No, it's good. I like it.
I got into, is it called The Residence? About a murder in the White House. It's a Shondaland production.
Right. Not because there's everyone's talking about Adolescence.
Yes.
And everyone's talking about Severance.
Yes.
And then there was Succession a while ago or something like that. Could have been Succession. Yeah. But there are too many shows. Succession. I just can't keep up with what's what anymore. That's crazy. I have to think, oh, which one is that again? Anyway. Get into it. My dog keeps eating my flowers. Where can I get this butt fly?
Horrible.
Yeah. Congo Chris says, I'm with Leanne. I have a macabre fascination with cyst lancing.
Yeah.
I'm more on Dirk's page here. My friend can watch drains being unclogged for days and days. There are those videos where they find pipes that have just been filled with mud and like leaf mulch and all kinds of things. And then they unblock them and it comes out,
like a turd.
It's revolting.
Yeah.
But it's so satisfying to see these unclogged drains and like gutters full of leaves or whatever else, and they get cleaned out. I love that.
And the Americans who have these internal like tumble dry systems, and it gets blocked with like tumble dry fluff.
Oh, no.
It comes out of a huge...
That's disgusting.
...poop hole out the side of their homes.
Sis. I just watched Mr. Robot for the second time, which is brilliant, says Sharon. And Azalea says, I've been to the land down under and a number of times for work, so I visit the less appealing towns. The less appealing towns in Australia. Well, it's like our less appealing towns. Would you really want to travel
to Harry Smith
all the way to South Africa and end up in, Colenso? You know? No. Said no one ever. I really want to go to Colenso. Three episodes into a Netflix series and then the gays come out. That's what Vutzarko's problem is. The gays. Yeah. They program the gays in on episode three. Always episode three.
These gays. They're trying to kill me.
Yeah, that was season two.
Yeah. I started my mom on season one.
Yeah.
And I forgot how hectic it was.
No, it's very hectic.
So the part that got her, there she is sitting in her wheelchair in her 70s with her carer next to her, and they've just finished reading the Bible.
Yeah.
And in the first one, it's the husband thinks he's got testicular cancer.
Yes.
And it doesn't warn you about anything. It just changes scene and goes straight to his fully naked crotch where he's having a look. And it comes up on TV. My mom screamed and the carer like covered her eyes. So that was the end of that. We didn't watch that anymore.
All right. Well, we've got a guest joining us in a short while. So a couple of things I want to do before we get there. So I know people can't get enough of Elon Musk at the moment. Some people can. But his new company, XAI, has acquired Vine, leading to speculations and excitement within the cryptocurrency community that a potential relaunch of the platform may happen with AI integration. This news has significantly increased the value of the Vine token, with enthusiasts predicting substantial growth in envisioning Vine as a competitor to platforms like TikTok. Do you remember Vine?
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, so Vine, and there was another one that was like, they were a bit, it was just pre, TikTok. Vine and something else with a V. There were music ones too, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do.
But Vine was a thing before TikTok. So apparently, discussions focus on the integration of AI, blockchain, and social media, with many expressing optimism about Vine's future market cap and its potential integration with other platforms like X. Community's response has been largely positive, with many investing in Vine in anticipation of the success. So I don't know. I mean, maybe...
I'm not happy with things integrating with X.
No.
I want to stay away from X right now.
Really? You're not charmed by it at the moment? Mm-mm. Not your thing?
No.
Toxic?
Yes, very much so. And I don't know. Pinterest has actually made such a comeback. It's hilarious.
Pinterest?
I promise you, Gen Z is actually getting back into, well, not back into, they're getting into Pinterest. And for a long time, it was, your decorating boards and your fashion boards and your architecture boards. Yeah. It's becoming a thing again. I think people are actually sick of the politics surrounding platforms like X.
No, maybe.
And Facebook.
Yeah, maybe.
So, that's on the rise, specifically in South Africa. And in fact, the Pinterest team was recently...
You have a Pinterest account?
ice from like 5FM days.
Oh, really? So you've been on there for years.
But never looked at it again in between.
So when last did you look at it?
I don't even know if I can still log in.
I had a Pinterest for a while, but I just never really put any effort in. And unless you're on there using it and you're actually adding things that you're interested in, it doesn't make sense to me.
Like if you have your sword collections and your architecture board and your, then it can be really nice. And it just gets away from this continuous political rhetoric and all of the poisonous opinions that are there.
The box jellyfish.
The box jellyfish of X social media. And Facebook.
Okay. All right. Well, you're like our guest for this morning. So Vivian is our guest. She's Vivian Almula Perry, and she has a PhD in life, she says. You know, that sounds to me like it's a lot more useful than a PhD in, I don't know,
botflies.
Philosophy. I don't think you'd have a PhD in botflies unless
maybe
you were
serious.
Maybe botflies, but as a youngster, she performed in a circus.
Wow.
And your dream job. She worked in a cruise liner and later traveled the globe as a flight attendant. So she's really done a lot.
You
get to experience the whole course of humanity there. After the birth of her daughter, she decided to start her own business, made her first million within a 2-year period.
Jeez.
So she's no slouch. She's written these books. She sent them to me the other day. Turn the page and close the book. But I'm going to leave it to you to talk to her about the books. We'll get to that in a short while. Find out what she's all about. So, Vivian, nice to have you on.
Morning.
Morning. Are you in your dressing gown?
Listen, I've got a bait. And when I told everybody, it's, you know, it's about bucket list. You said I've done everything. I've never been on a show in my gown. So everybody went, don't you dare. And I said, you know what? Wait, I'm going to do it. So I don't know. I learned 2 things. It's not that easy to do it. Number 2, I need a new dressing gown. And number 3, in Durban, it is hot as hell, so please can I take it off?
Well, all right. As long as you've got something on underneath there, we don't want to frighten the
children. No, it's fine. Thank you. Please, I'm struggling here.
Okay. There we go. That's better. All right. But you did it. You've done the you won on the dare front. Okay. So listen. First of all, this is a hell of a life. So we're going to get you to just explain it in your own words here. You started off in a circus.
It's you know what? I've done so much more in my life, but it's always the one thing that people ask me about. I was 21, and when my father died, we didn't have any money after school.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to travel. So I went for a very brief period to Germany because I could speak German. And I worked for somebody in the South African embassy. And there I learned I knew nothing about our country. It was actually so embarrassing. So when I came back, I came back with a zest. You know, I'm going to learn about this country and places. And I don't think I do well working for other people. So my first job coming back was sort of a waitress somewhere in Durban.
Yeah.
And there was an advert. I don't know. You'll remember we saw adverts.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't internet. And there was an advert to join the circus, I think, as a candy floss operator or something like that. And I went for the interview, and then the one day I got fired by the manager, and on the same day I got a call from them because the dancing girl left in Durban and they needed somebody, and I was the only person she could sort of remember thinking I could do something. And then she said, no, come, we're somewhere in Stanger. And I was like, okay, I packed my bags, and I left my mum a note that said, gone, joined the circus. And they thought I was joking. I sort of like joined with no clothes, no pots and pans. But I mean, it was the most amazing time. I got to know the country. I was like a guest in our own country. I loved it. So
I just, whenever anyone says that they were in a circus, I immediately just imagine them on a unicycle with juggling and taming a lion and. All right.
You know what? That is true. I think my first job was like the magician's assistant. and dancing girls. And I mean, we learned so much. I rode the elephants in my first year. It was incredible.
Did you ever get sawn? Did you ever get sawn in half by the magician?
That's exactly no. I was impaled by lots of swords. Like, you know, that was the first one I did. Like,
well, they put this unbelievable. And you don't have any scars to prove it, huh?
No, unfortunately not. But I mean, it's years ago. I still have friends that I met that time. It was the Basil Wilkie Circus. They actually went to Corin. They actually in, I think they're in France at the moment, and Corin Wilkie passed away, I think, a couple of years ago.
So, it's just, it's an amazing thing. That like circuses used to be a big part of what entertained us. I just don't know how many people in the world are still interested in circuses. I'm glad to hear they're still going, but there we are. All right, so let's just fast forward a little bit. Then you ended up working, as many people do, on cruise liners and planes. But the most amazing thing about that is that I suppose you get to know people and you get to figure out very quickly who's who in the zoo, what people's motives are. We were talking to Dr. Hanan in the first hour this morning about how, you know, people love giving advice. They just don't like taking it. But
I loved what he said. And by the way, thank you. There are a lot of, we touched on subject of moving out of your comfort zone, which is why I wrote the book, and to embrace change. And and what he said is true. My thing is people have to be ready for it as well. You can't give advice. I believe a lot of it is like self-expression and how you want to better yourself. So self-evaluation, looking at where you can be a better person. So I like advice when I ask for it. If it makes sense, or if I pay somebody to give me advice. Yet I'm here this morning,
No, listen, I'm kind of hoping you can give us some advice because you've written these books, but you care about embracing change at any age. So a lot of people who are perhaps in their 40s, 50s, 60s, they go, I am what I am. I'm not going to change now. This is what you get. There's no reason for me to adapt. There's no reason for me to make myself uncomfortable. I want to be within my comfort zone all the time. You know what I'm talking about.
I don't care what other people think.
I don't care what other people think. And especially, like, I think this is true more for men who become habitual and boring and predictable. Is that there's space for change. You can still become better. You can still improve. You can still make yourself more interesting and useful in the world by just accepting that you can change at any age.
You know, there are two parts. The one is if you're comfortable with where you are, I mean, it's a wonderful place to be. If you're happy in your soul and your mind and you have a beautiful life and everything's, you're grateful. I mean, there, I don't think you need change if you don't really want to. But it's when you have that little voice speak into your heart and say, you know, but I've had an amazing life. And I found now I'm at an age where you either see me retired and I got so bored, almost like depressed. Because, I mean, I know that there's so much more that we can do. So when we get older, what happens is that we've had our comfort zone for so long. I mean, whether your kids were at school, my first big change came when my daughter left school and I ended up with, I'm not lying to you, complex PTSD. I was in hospital and I was forced to change because I had to sell everything. So that's a different scenario where, I mean, when you are forced to change, you don't have a choice. You have to make changes. You're thrown into it. So even you can't even make that decision yourself. And that happens a lot, like in our country, where you lose your job or you're forced or you lose a partner. And then I think for the older generation, but I heard the other day, it's even young people, it's so difficult because you're in this cocoon and your body is used to just what you know. And the minute you step out of it, it's like fear, anxiety. I mean, I cannot tell you how I struggled. And when, like you said, when I was 20, I could join the circus. I went overseas. I mean, I flew all over the world. And you'd think that I'd be able to recreate that. Listen, it was so difficult. I ended up with, I never knew what anxiety was. until then, because, and that's just my body telling me, no, you're not, like, it doesn't want it to. You're kicking like that donkey you're talking about.
So, all right. I mean, it's very difficult to actually embrace change and to get things changing. And I suppose that's what unnatural birth is all about. But when you actually have changes thrust upon you in your life, you don't have much of an option. Like, you know, a parent dies, a child is born, a job is lost, a house, you move houses, you give up on a certain career path and you take on another one. So I think for many of us, you don't have the option of choosing some of these things. They happen to you. Do you think that that results in the same kind of positive change for most people? Or do you think that for some, it's just a trauma and they end up with that anxiety you were talking about and they don't ever actually progress from there?
That's where I think Dr. Anand said where change is so difficult, because you're thrown into it and you have to make that change. And the reason I wrote this is when you're so overwhelmed and fearful and anxiety, I mean, they can't live on the same plane as creativity to think.
No.
Desperation calls, what I wanted to say as well, you can't think. And I wanted, I mean, what I'm saying is, it's you're so fearful, you don't know what to do, and then you can watch, try and read a book. It doesn't work because it's so difficult. And I went through this journey, and I said, look, that's what I wanted to document, is when you go through it, I want something that's easy, achievable, easy steps. If you fall down, you can get back up and then just go again, and make it fun. I think now lately I started like really having a lot of fun with it. But make it fun and just help people in that time frame with just easy steps. It's okay, you know, but you're allowed to feel those feelings. But, I mean, I find it extremely difficult. I mean, I still fall down every now and then. Like, I wake up on this, I go, oh, my word, like, you know, I'm not good enough. And we all feel that. So I just
Vivian,
want to bring a little bit of light, you know.
So let me ask you about this, because change, if you're going to make changes and embrace them at any age, I think it probably starts with little things, right? So let's just look at some examples. So if, for example, you know, my business partner says he brushes his teeth with his other hand just so that he can rediscover how hard it is, because we go through these things all the time where we just do the same thing every day for the same reason. And he does these things to kind of just reset and also to kind of bring in new habits and to appreciate the things that you've forgotten, that you take for granted. So there are a number of reasons to do that I haven't got into, but what are the small things that you do to embrace change and that you tell other people to do when they're a bit stuck?
I think the first thing I learned, I actually watched a podcast because I was searching for something. I mean, I love motivational videos, and I was searching. But for me, the breakthrough came when somebody said all it is a habit. And if you can understand it's a habit, like, please understand, for 20 years, if you've got a child, you're doing the same thing, or you've had a partner. It just became a habit, a comfort zone. If you can understand that is just a habit that you got used to, it doesn't matter how big or how small, that habit can be changed with the tiniest of things. So I think when I learned that and realized this is a habit, I can change a little habit, like what you said, like brushing my teeth differently.
Right.
For me, it was I started walking. I would put my walking shoes on. They are 50 years old, though. My Nikes, I think they should be worth a fortune. But I literally have one pair of shoes. I'm not lying to you. One pair. And when you look back at photos, I'm like, I think I've had them for 20 years. And I still only have that one pair. And then I go down the lift, and then I go, should I go left or right? It's like one decision.
Well, you only
okay, have... I'm lucky I live in Mshlati, so we are very lucky in some moved here. But it's a little decision, and the walking...
Well, literally there, I mean, you do. It's left or right. And there's no... you can't go anywhere else.
If I go straight, I go into the sea. Like some people said, they're going to drive me in there.
Correct. Okay, so
just left or right.
Embrace change at any age. Change little things by intentional action. Let's just talk about authenticity for a second, because this is something I hear all kinds of people saying. The most inauthentic people I've ever met are talking about authenticity the whole time. You know, it's so important to be authentic. And I'm like, but you're just a carbon cutout of everyone else in your fucking office. Mm. You're not interesting. How can you pretend that you're authentic? And everybody says they want this, Vivian, but they don't really. Because when they meet authenticity, they like, you know, I mean, I gave props to old women for not being like old men and being stuck in their habits and being boring. But women say they want authenticity, but when they get it, they're all pissed off with you because you said something that's true or you're being authentic. And they're like, why did you have to say that? That's so mean. You know what I'm talking about?
You know, exactly. Actually, that's how, you know, why I like you is because you say it as it is. You call a spade a spade. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I love people that are controversial or just like just being themselves. I read that authenticity is 4 times more powerful than love. I mean, if you're authentic, you will shine through. It doesn't matter. And I get called out a lot. I've got a very, it's a new word, you know, that I've learned.
Yeah.
It's called demure. I've got, you know, there's like so many demure people. You know, we only go to the best restaurants. But I mean, I love them. You know what? It's your life. It is, but my demure friend is demure. She's authentic. So she shines through. She does extremely well in business. I love all people, but I'm just not that person. Like I enjoy having fun and being crazy. So I've been called out that I shouldn't act this way. You know, it's like really not, it's, you know.
Who tells you that? I'm curious. Who would say that?
I would say because it's not natural what I do and how an author should behave. But come on, I worked in a circus. I had a good life. Why should I retire? And if I, like you know what, I want to be, we're going to start doing a series where we're going to start fishing with people, things we haven't done, you know, ride on bicycles, try stand-up paddles. You know, we should enjoy it and have fun. I mean, I'm sort of, that's where I'm going to my ear, and I thought, I'm not giving up. I mean, I don't care how many wrinkles I have. If I want to try surfing, I'm going to. So...
Listen,
I think people are scared to put themselves out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that because they're worried about what other people think. So if you want to be authentic, you have to stop caring what other people think. And in doing that, you may have to sacrifice some popularity and some comfort, because when you are authentic, you have to stand on your own 2 feet, and there are going to be people who disagree with you, which means you're going to be leading yourself into conflict a lot of the time. People don't understand that. They go, I really love authentic people. You say to them, no, you don't. You like people who just toe the line. You don't know
but
what authentic
gonna
means.
You're going to meet your tribe. You're going to meet
please.
People that, that's like you.
I mean, a lot you can't of nonsense.
I can't try and be – sorry, I feel very uncomfortable. It was even like deciding, you know, how am I going to dress up? You know, it's
what,
like
for
very
this show?
Serious. You know, I'm going on a YouTube
– what, for this
like
show?
On YouTube. You know, if I can tell you how many people were so scared because I was going to wear my pajamas. And even this morning, because of what they told me, I woke up, I thought, oh, no.
All right.
Like, I can't.
I mean.
And then I thought, no, stuff it. You know, if I feel like I want to do it,
all right.
I'm going to
do
it.
So tell me about you for a second, because, I mean, you do seem to be a bit of a rule breaker, and you do seem to be one of these people who's a little bit left field. So what sort of crazy shit have you got up to in your life? I mean, I want to know what you, especially when you are on the ships or in the planes or in the circus, like what kind of wild, insane stuff did you get up to?
I think that's what I'm trying to say. When I was young, I had such an amazing life. And now that I'm older, like I'm supposed to sit and write books. Yes, you know, I really want to help people, but I want to help them in a fun way and start doing crazy again. So I mean, in the circus, I think we did Namibia, right? And I actually got engaged to one of the walkies because he had a nicer caravan. Because like, we were living in squalor. You know, like in these little...
So you got engaged.
Like when you join, yeah, and his name is Walter Walkie. Thank goodness he's not here anymore. But I mean, he had a nice caravan because he was a Wilkie, or like he was the cousin of the cousin of.
Yeah.
And I would stay with him because, I mean, he was a nice guy, but he just had a bigger caravan. And then we would, I mean, it was just the dancing girls. I mean, Namibia was excellent. I mean, it's just, I think, and the weird thing is I never worry about money. I just had the best time of my life. Even SA, I mean, this boat thing, it was a half-ton passenger liner and a cargo ship. We, you know.
That sounds horrific.
I will never forget, was it Black Sambuca was extremely cheap. And we would drink Black Sambuca and orange juice.
Ugh.
And we were on our way to Kenya, and we drank so much, we threw the deck chairs overboard, but we didn't realize we were in the harbor. So the captain came and the deck chairs were floating in the harbor and we were all fired. And we're like, okay, how do we get home now? And I polished Brasso. I wasn't paid. I polished Brasso.
Yeah.
The entire way back until I had to come back to South Africa. I mean, it's just... I'm actually now thinking about it. I mean, it's shocking. But I mean, that is... I think I worked for SAA, and all my jobs have been because I spoke German, and I was working for, I think, Thompson's in Durban or something. And they said to me, but I was like 33 at the time.
Yeah.
And they said, you know what, you should go and work for SAA because they, you know, they're looking for, you know, people that can speak a language. So I think they took in 4,000 crew that could speak French and I mean, I was a German one.
Right.
I mean, the stuff we did, every town you went to, they would give us dollars, you know, for every day. And then Sundays we'd have that, like, we'd have like a 10-day, a 4-day. I mean, nowadays they make you stay 2 days in a country, they make you fly back. But we would get dollars, and I'd be so excited when we had the days because it just meant more money. You know, I could go and see more stuff.
Right.
So yeah, so the traveling part came from there. But I mean, I think you should live your life like that. It doesn't matter what job you have. You should just try and find enjoyment.
I want to ask you about one last thing, which you cover in the book. And you talk about breaking free from victimhood, which I'm totally on your side about. This is not a surprising thing. It should be in everyone's universe. It should be a guiding principle for just about everybody. The moment you become a victim and you allow yourself to be thought of as a victim and you start getting addicted to other people's compassion, sympathy, and you put yourself in a position where that's you become it's a necessary part of your day, then you are doomed, because from that moment on, the thrill that you get out of being sympathized with, for want of a better term, becomes more valuable to you than the thrill of success or of making a difference in other people's lives. You become very much more self-involved, and it's just a spiral to the bottom. How for you did breaking free from victimhood become an important part of the discussion? And is there a personal story or is there a reason that that's an important thing to you?
You know, before I can tell you my personal story, what aggravates me, I think even we're not going to politics, but what I want to say is our whole country is in this thing of victimhood.
Yeah.
Let's place the blame on somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing I want to say is if you use, you know, look at countries all over the world. I mean, there are people with worse stories than ours. I mean, there are people with no homes, countries that are being bombed. And we want to carry on about, oh, it's not my fault. No. You know, being indoctrinated. You can use that to feel whatever it is that you want to do. I mean, what happened to me as a child is that we're talking sort of abuse when I was 5, that I do not have a memory of until I was in matric. So in my subconscious, the minute my daughter was born, something very weird happened because I suppressed all the memories. I mean, I had to go, they had to hypnotize me to find out what happened to me. But I'm not playing the victim. All I'm saying is that it fueled me in such a way when my daughter was born to say, no person or country or government, nobody is going to stand. I'm going to stand by myself. I'm going to make my own money. It filled me. So if you can just find something, you know what, bad things happen to us, everybody in this country. We are not unique, or I'm not unique.
No, absolutely.
But use that as to fuel you to say it, because you need something so strong. When the first little hurdle comes, you need to get over that hurdle. And it served me so well to do well for my child. I mean, we're living, I'm living the life. But it is because of what happened to me, and I'm not apologizing. I'm just saying it served me. I used it.
But these days, if I have to hear one more sob story, I mean, it became all the rage. Do you remember during the 2010s till about 2015, where every single person was suddenly unburdening themselves about all the shit that had happened to them? I don't care that your uncle fingered you when you were six. It's none of my fucking business. I don't want to know about that, right?
Oh, Lordy.
Don't you agree, Leanne?
We need that. Your energy needs to be, you know, we need to do uplifting shows, like uplift people. I mean, more fun and laughter. I mean, the world's bad enough as it is. And I think just find some happiness and joy in your life. And if you can just find the happiness and the joy, it uplifts your vibrations. And then you attract more people to you because you're such a fun person, and then great things happen to you.
Okay, but hang on, because Leanne didn't even answer me. So don't you agree that nobody cares?
No, I think that time was important, because for too long people were saying nothing, and the cyclical abuse was carrying on without anyone saying anything. Because I think it needed to come out. We needed to have a safe space in which we could share our feelings and say what had happened to us and show on the bear where we were touched. But yes, you may not want to hear about it, but I might need to tell someone. But I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'm not the guy to tell.
No, that's you're all. Not the guy to tell. That's what.
No. You're not the guy to tell, but I do agree that it needs to come out, because if people didn't speak up and have the courage, we wouldn't know how prevalent it is. We would never know. So it takes courage to do these things and stand up.
No.
So I won't use my psychologist, that's for sure.
No, I'll upset them horribly, and then they won't want to be a psychologist anymore. The only one who survived is Dr. Hanan. Congo Chris says it's called trauma dumping for a reason. It's your shit. Yeah, I think maybe Leanne is right. I mean, it does make sense what you're saying about how there was a need at the time for people to open up, be vulnerable, let it out, all that kind of thing. I just think it got to a point where it was completely self-absorbed, and people were just going round and round in circles, sharing stories about all the shit things that had happened to them. And the reality is that in the world, very few people are thinking about you and your problems. First of all, they're not thinking about you. Second of all, they're not thinking about your problems. And it just seems to me like it's self-indulgent in a very, very bad way. So I like the fact that you included this victim mentality stuff. All right. So if people are interested in what you're talking about, where can they find out more? And tell us about the book in general, so that you can just point it at the right people, the people who need to read these books.
Thank you. Can I just make a comment on what you said? You know about your, I think, why you don't like people dumping their problems. It's also about the energy, and it's, you know, we have, it depends on what your majority or your emotional state is. If it's permanently negative, it's not wonderful. But I mean,
I just genuinely don't care. Like, I just have no time for it at all. I'm a happy person, and I don't want you bringing me down with your story about your uncle when you were six. Yeah. Nobody cares.
Yeah. Okay. Point
that's
taken.
All.
So, the sun's coming up on my side now. Can you see the sun?
Yeah, we can. There we go.
Really lovely. So, for me, it is, if you're going through a difficult time and you want, and you know you're unhappy, and you know that it could have been, please understand, I'm not a psychologist. This is just like what you said, a PhD in love.
Sure.
I developed a 7-step series that is really easy to read. It's even 100 pages. And I take you step by step. And it's about walking every day, intentional walking. Because my entire book was written walking on the beach, asking questions before I start and say, I'm struggling with this. By the time I got back, I promise you, I had all the answers. I mean, I can show you, my entire book was written in a normal book that I just wrote every day. Found the
by hand.
In just walking, because walking is almost like meditation, because you're looking at the plants, it gives you time to think. And all the answers are really within you. You just have to analyze them and find an easy way to do it. So can you see my little book? My daughter even designed the cover.
Oh, nice. It's a family affair.
Say again.
It's a family affair. I like this.
Yeah, it's the expensive school fees, you know. It's just advice.
You had to get something back out of her, yeah.
Like, I thought I was done after school, and then it's like, oh, no, shit. Now we've got, like,
didn't it worry you calling it unnatural birth that people would think that it was, like, about C-sections or something?
You know what? I wanted to call the book Happy Human, How to Be a Happy Human. And I never knew what it was like to have anxiety. And my daughter said to me, but Mum, you make it sound so simple. It's actually so difficult when you've got anxiety. And I couldn't understand this anxiousness until I had it myself. And she said, it's not easy. Like, you're making it sound like it's easy. And a natural birth came when I was actually walking. And I was like, how can I explain to people? It's about your comfort zone. So when you want to give birth, like a woman could give birth, think of an alien or a guy. You can't push out a baby. It's like so unnatural. So that is the courage and the energy it takes to move out of that comfort zone in order for you to give birth to a new idea or a new dream that you want. It is not easy. It takes hard work, but I'm trying to make it as easy as possible. So unnatural is just, it's not natural. Right. When I did a show and I make the guys,
I just, it would have obviously been more disturbing if you'd had like a massive vagina on the cover or something. So.
I think it would have sold better, I suppose. Like,
no, I don't think. I think it would have frightened away perhaps the people you're trying to reach here. I think this is great. Listen, I love the fact that it is 2025. You're able to self-publish a book that probably will help lots of people because it's not coming from an expert. You know, the experts have been so discredited as well. I would almost rather hear from someone who's been through it themselves and who has some life advice and who has some interesting stories to tell. And that's certainly what you've got, which is why I'm pleased to have you on the show. So well done. And I hope the book goes well. Here, Unnatural Birth. You can see it behind Vivian over there as well. And On the Brink of a Breakthrough. Get there. I mean, get to the brink of the breakthrough and then break on through. That's what you got to do.
Yeah, they
didn't
can
even mean for that. You know what?
I'm also in the Stone Ages. You can't find the book on Amazon because I still haven't gotten there. So where do we find it? You can email me. Like, I need to know who people are.
Okay.
So it's OBS. I'll ask obsupliftment@outlook.com.
Yeah, that's too complicated. We're going to put it in the link.
Is it?
No, yeah, it's fine. We'll put it as a link at the end of the episode, and then people can find it there as well.
But you thank you. I'm happy to give away a book to a
no,
viewer.
I don't want to do it later. I'm not worrying about couriers and all that shit. No, they must pay for your book. No, Vivian, they must pay for your book.
Couriers cheap lately. There are lots of ways.
I have no interest in getting into couriers, just like I don't want to know about people being fondled when they were at an inappropriate age. All right, so. Listen, well done on the book, and thank you for joining us this morning. And I wish you luck. And Leanne, show us on the teddy bear where the bad man went. Right?
Listen, before we go, I've got something that I know you'll love.
Oh, go on.
It's the Pentagram Band.
What?
And it just appeared out of nowhere. This is a band. They're called Doom Metal, American Doom Metal, heavy metal band.
Yes.
And this video appeared of this guy. This guy has been in this band since 1971, and he's still going.
Is this the one who stares maniacally?
Yes.
Yeah, we played a clip of him. It's called the
Pentagram Band.
Okay, let's see. There's
the dog. I don't know if you just play the. I think maybe play the first clip just to remind anyone who doesn't.
Okay.
And then the dog, right. And then the Plasticine. That would be amazing. Thanks.
Carol. Well, we're going to take it step by step, clearly. It's all right. First, the original clip of the guy, the mad maniacal dude. I think we've heard this. Yes. Since.
Here.
All right, I remember him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who could forget him?
And
he looks like he's possessed.
The train has become a thing, and now everyone's doing their own versions.
Okay.
Somebody submitted their pet.
Okay, let's see the pet.
Oh,
oh but there's him.
Seen one.
Jesus, since 1971.
You can stop it now.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, the pet won't. Somebody's pet looks just like him. It's got googly eyes that are like almost out to the side. And these gray fluffy ears. And they're facing into a fan and just staring. Oh, gosh. But
right,
yeah,
well,
he's
like
been
it.
Going strong since 1971.
Unbelievable.
The band has changed members many times because everyone else has died. He's the original and only one.
That's unbelievable. Imagine being the other
guy.
And
they're considered like one of the top five dooms metal bands in the world.
Really?
Yes.
Doom, doo 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 doom, doo 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 doom.
So weird.
All right. Very good. Well, we've had some inspiration and some, let's just say, warning signs.
Yes. Warning against gambling, obviously.
Yeah. Jeez, that was very depressing. I don't want to talk about gambling again for months.
Yeah.
But there we are. Lots of interesting things on this morning. And enjoy the last day of March. We will see you on Wednesday.
Dick trying to penetrate inside. They try to go backdoor with Dick. Dick hard charging to the cup. Dick is going to score.
Dick was coming wide open backdoor.
Dick couldn't hit it.
Dick goes down.
Dick rises up. Dick goes down.
Mobile in. Dick is out.
Dick struggling big time tonight. And-